Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The following podcast contains adult content, explicit language, and sexual themes. Listener discretion is advised. And it contains murder. Lots and lots of murder.
You stinking bastard.
People tell me, hey, you're gonna go die and go to hell. At least I'm not alone.
Down for 911, where's your emergency?
Oh, this is Sandy. We're 41 York. Talk to the road.
What's the problem?
Send the police.
Hey guys, don't be a hero, mate. And I said, I'm not trying to be a hero, but the police are coming.
One in the chest, one in the hip. Fired by Detective Sergeant Roger Rogerson.
I was branching out. That's when the cannibalism started, eating of the heart and the arm muscle.
I wear a male Carl Williams hands to a coffee table and just pull it out of his backside. Carl Williams is a wobbly bottom little cherub face little boy whose life would be.
I'd harm someone each time. I'd kill someone to be an enormous amount of my life. Especially at first, enormous amount of horror, guilt, remorse afterwards. But then that impulse to do it again would come back even stronger.
Young mother of two, Lindsay Quay, went missing from the town of Southport, England in 1998. It was 53 days before a social worker reported her disappearance to the police. Her husband, Mitchell, claimed Lindsay had deserted him and their kids on Christmas Day.
He ran to every media outlet in the vicinity to throw himself a public pity party and denigrate Lindsay to the press. The police and Lindsay's family knew that Lindsay had died at the hands of her abusive husband. The problem was how they would find a way to prove her murder without a body.
Hi, I'm Barney Black.
And I'm Tara Saraband.
And this is Bloody Murder.
We're a comedy true crime podcast focusing on some of the lesser known crime stories from Australia.
And indeed around the globe.
Being a comedy true crime podcast means that we use dark humour as a means to tell horrifying stories.
If you think humour has no business being associated with tragedy, then Bloody Murder will not be the podcast for you.
Though we should warn you that there is not a lot of humour in today's episode.
It's a tragic example of how domestic violence can turn to murder.
Now, before we commence our sordid tales, we'd like to remind you this episode is brought to you by our wonderful and generous patrons.
We've had loads of new ones join our new fancy Patreon program, which we will thank individually after our story.
Hey, you got a fancy in there. There you go. It's all right.
I did. Hooray!
If you'd like to become a patron, go to our website for details. That's bloodymurderpodcast.com.
As a patron, you have access to loads of other episodes, including our Dirty Pillows and Shit in a Bucket first season, and ad-free versions of all our regular episodes.
As well as exclusive, uncensored, patron-only monthly episodes where we are really let loose.
Levels above $5 receive free stickers and handmade Barney badges, and I've been hard on that badge-making machine all week.
Oh, yeah. You've been pounding out the badges.
I have. My hands hurt from it.
Oh. And, of course, you're automatically entered into the draw for our monthly giveaways.
All right, Tara, let's get murdery.
Lindsay Wilson was the youngest daughter of six children born to parents Linda and Peter Wilson in the large seaside town of Southport in Merseyside, England. Her mother, Linda, said she'd been a shy little kid but grew up to be fun-loving, outgoing and outspoken. In February 1995, 17-year-old Lindsay fell pregnant to her first serious boyfriend. With a baby on the way, the young couple decided to get engaged. Lindsay rethought the relationship and broke off the engagement, but she decided to keep the baby. At 5 months pregnant, Lindsay was living alone and in a vulnerable state when she met 20-year-old croupier Mitchell Quay. He said he was attracted to her smile and how gorgeous she was. They got engaged a week later and married 5 weeks after that, on August 1st, 1995. Lindsay's father, Peter, told the TV show Prime Suspect Real Life, He caught Lindsay on the rebound, and that's what it was. Even that day ended up with a big argument at the end of the night, so maybe that was a sign of things to come. Detective Superintendent Jeff Sloan said of Kwai, he'd actually become violent on the night of their wedding, and that started a chain of events that continued in that vein. Very, very quickly, he started controlling Lindsay's life. After Lindsay's daughter from a previous relationship, Robin, was born, Kwai's violence against her escalated. Her sister Paula Horton told media, she wanted him out of the flat, and I said, you've only just got married, give it a chance. And she said, you don't understand, he hits me. A year after Robin was born, Lindsay found out she was pregnant to Kwai, but she had grave doubts about their relationship. She told her sister Paula that she wouldn't bring a child into the world the way things were with him. Kwai later claimed that he was going around proudly telling everyone he was going to be a father, and then evil Lindsay had an abortion for no reason. Lindsay wasn't in contact with her parents or siblings at the time and had to deal with the abortion and raising baby Robin on her own.
Kwai never forgave Lindsay for having the abortion. He viewed it as her killing his child, not as an abused teenage girl with a baby trying to lessen the devastation in her life. He told a documentary crew, it sickened me. I had no control over it.
Control is everything for this guy.
Yeah, he and all the domestic abusers.
Yep.
His abusive behaviour towards her intensified to the point Lindsay had to take out a court order against him. Lindsay was a tiny petite woman standing over 5 foot tall. Kwai enjoyed the fact that he was able to physically overpower her. Despite how toxic the marriage was, the couple broke up, but they always got back together, which is very common in abusive relationships. Lindsay left Kwai several times and he walked out on her multiple times too. He also cheated on her regularly. Lindsay told her mum there were lots of shops in the area she couldn't go into because Kwai had slept with a woman who worked there or was shopping there. In late 1996, it seemed like Lindsay had gotten rid of Kwai for good. But 5 months later, in April 1997, Lindsay decided to take him back again. He claimed she wanted to have a baby with him straight away, but he wasn't sure about it as he didn't trust her after the last time. In his mind, nothing was ever his fault. Everything was always her fault. Lindsay became pregnant soon after taking Kwai back.
Look, we wouldn't be surprised if he wanted to get her pregnant just as a means to possess and control her even more.
That does make sense. When Lindsay was 4 months pregnant with their son, Kwai had a massive tantrum and went berserk in their flat. He smashed all the windows, broke doors off their hinges, and even smashed up his own car. Fortunately, Lindsay was able to grab baby Robin and run from the flat in one piece. After all the damage Kwai had caused to the property, the couple got evicted but stayed together. In October 1997, their son Jack was born. Kwai walked out on Lindsay and the kids 6 months later.
When they split up in April 98, Lindsay was so scared of Kwai that she was given a personal attack alarm. With the help of a women's aid organisation, she found a new home for herself and her two young children. Entries from her diary show that Lindsay was happy to be away from Kwai, and she said she didn't miss him at all. She devoted her life to her children, Robin and Jack, and took them everywhere with her, often walking for miles, pushing them in a double stroller. Her friends said that she was a very loving mum and a frightened young woman. In summer 98, former croupier Kwai had a casual job as a ride operator at Southport Pleasureland. Now, it sounds like a sex shop, but it was actually an amusement park. According to the TV show Real Crime, he got fired from the position for assaulting a customer.
We couldn't find out if she was a petite woman just over 5 foot tall or not, but that definitely seemed to be his favourite type of punching bag.
Mm-hmm. Lindsay held fast to their most recent breakup. She refused to see Kwai and wouldn't let him see the kids. He said she did this to hurt him, but obviously it was to try to protect herself and her children. Kwai used Jack's first birthday as a means to weasel his way back into Lindsay's life. He said all the right things, and vulnerable, lonely Lindsay took him back. She didn't tell her family or friends she'd taken him back at first because she knew how they'd react. When they found out, they were appalled. They were disappointed Lindsay had taken him back and felt there were only so many times they could watch it happen. Within a few weeks, Kwai had gotten back to his violent and abusive old tricks and made Lindsay regret their reconciliation. On October 22nd, Lindsay met up with her older sister Paula and she asked her to help her get Kwai to leave their home for good. Paula said that she couldn't do that again, as when she'd done so before, it caused a rift between her and Lindsay and she hadn't been able to see Lindsay for months. Paula didn't want to be estranged from her sister again. When Paula left, Lindsay handed her a note inside a newspaper that said, "Please help me." The next day, Paula gave the note to their mother, who would also not intervene. Paula said Lindsay had taken Kwai back because she was lonely, and now she had nobody left to help her escape from him. Lindsay's mum, Linda, revealed in Prime Suspect Real Life that she stopped visiting her daughter because she didn't want to see Kwai. Linda said that the last time she saw Lindsay was on December 13th. Lindsay loved Christmas and was reveling in buying presents for her children.
Lindsay Kwai was last seen alive on December 15th, 1998. Her mum Linda called her several times on Christmas Eve, but she never answered. Later that day, Kwai visited her parents to collect their Christmas presents for the kids. Unhappy to see him darkening their doorstep, Linda asked him where Lindsay was. Kwai told her that Lindsay was getting ready to go out and said he suspected she was seeing somebody else. Kwai later claimed that Lindsay had gone out partying all night on Christmas Eve and came home drunk and wrecked at 7 a.m. on Christmas morning. He said that she went to bed, got up at 2 p.m. and just walked out, never to return. According to those that knew her, this was not at all how Lindsay would have behaved. She'd been very much looking forward to Christmas with her kids. When asked about Kwai's version of events, Linda said it was complete rubbish. I don't believe one thing he said. Lindsay was reported missing by a social worker on February 5, 1999, which was 53 days after she was last seen. Kwai did not mention her disappearance to her family. When asked about this, he said, "Why would I contact Lindsay's family? We just don't like each other." After Lindsay was reported missing, nobody saw her again, apart from Mitchell Kwai, that is. He claimed she was still alive and he'd seen her several times all over town, but nobody else had. He maintained that he'd seen her in a black Mercedes in Southport and told police he'd received a letter from her saying she had run off with another man. He was unable to show this letter to anyone because it didn't exist. Over the next 18 months, Mitchell Kwai took every opportunity he could get to go on television and talk to the media, throwing himself a pity party and telling the world his wife had walked out on him and her 3-year-old daughter Robin and their 18-month-old son Jack.
He's the pin-up boy for how much abusers just love playing the victim. It's
disgusting.
Yes.
Kwai repeatedly denied he had anything to do with his wife's disappearance. He also said he'd never hit a woman in his life and he never would. He must have been wearing flame-retardant pants, Tara.
Yeah, or like he'd made himself a loophole, like, "I don't hit women, I just slap them, kick them, strangle them, you know, bang them into walls,
well, but I don't hit them."
That's right. I'm just going to ball my hands into a fist and then a woman just walked into them. He would call into radio stations and appear on talk shows claiming that Lindsay had just got up and left one day and never came back. At a police press conference, Kwai said she left without saying goodbye. "I thought she would have come back for the kids, but she obviously does not care about us anymore."
Detective Superintendent Jeff Sloan said that Kwai exploited the whole situation by talking to the media for the next 18 months. He said, "I just felt like he was an egotist in exploiting the situation. He started to revel in his own notoriety." Kwai basked in the attention because he's a narcissistic asshole and it gave him a chance to monologue about his side of the story of his relationship with Lindsay. She had no right of reply and it was exactly the way he wanted things to be. Of the child she aborted, Kwai told the media, "It sickened me. It really did. It absolutely sickened me." When it was suggested that this might have given him a motive for killing Lindsay, Kwai, with a big smile on his face, said that it did give him motive, but that he didn't do it. He actually lights up talking to the television cameras because he's just so fucking pleased with himself. Oh, he thinks like everyone's believing him and he's getting won over on the world. And he clearly thinks he can do no wrong, going on to say, "Police have been going around interviewing all the people I've ever slept with. I know they're clutching at straws now. What do they think? I shagged her to death or something?" Then he laughs along with his hilarious joke before dismissing the police as being bloody pathetic.
If only he'd channeled his energy into a stand-up comedy career instead.
I doubt he'd be successful since he isn't funny.
I know, but wouldn't it be nice to see this douchebag booed off stage?
Oh yeah, it will be. He also told the cameras that he hadn't exactly been celibate since Lindsay's disappearance, or before then for that matter. About his sex life, he said, and I quote, "Oh, if you get offered it on a platter, you take it." It. Ugh, he's so vile.
We'll be back with more of the case of the smiling sociopath after this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, Barney, what time is it?
It's True Crime Nerd Time.
True Crime Nerd Time. True Crime Nerd Time.
True Crime Nerd Time is an opportunity for you, our listeners, to give us your recommendations for anything true crime related. It can be a book, movie, TV series, graphic novel, song, naughty kitten.
Yeah, he makes me want to commit a true crime.
I know, he's so rowdy.
He really is. We haven't been able to make it more than a sentence without him interrupting
us. Oh, he's looking at me with a defiant look in his eyes.
He's going to climb your bare chest.
No, I need my man boobs. What was I saying? Oh, yeah. Or just about anything that has scratched your true crime itch. No scratching, Laszlo.
He wants to scratch your everywhere itch.
You can record your voice, just do it on your phone, we'll play it. Or write it, and we'll read it out. And we have one here from Alison Cunningham.
Hey, Alison.
And she writes, "Hello, honeys. I was listening to a recent episode and heard you mention that you were running a bit low on recommendations for your true crime nerd times. Isn't it funny that true crime fans can't shut the fuck up about true crime until you ask them to compose a slightly intelligent email? What a lazy, pajama-wearing, chip-covered, Bill Curtis-loving crew we are." Her words, not
Nailed
mine.
Nailed it.
Her words, not mine.
I feel like she was describing me.
I have a recommendation. It is a book I read months ago but continues to stick with me today. Don't you love that when a book resonates with you?
Absolutely.
It's called The Indifferent Stars Above, The Harrowing Saga of a Donner Party Bride by Daniel James Brown. The title is misleading. It isn't about a singular bride. It is a full and thoroughly researched story of the Donner Party. Oh shit, does Australia know about the Donner Party? Group of people, westward expansion, got caught in some mountains, ate each other. You must, right? If I know who Ivan Milat is, Australian true crime fans must know a bit about the Donner Party.
Not much.
Dollop did an episode on it once. That was pretty good.
Oh, we love those guys.
We do. Anyway, this book is about the entire experience. It's amazingly researched and thorough, but the best part is that it reads like a novel. I had to keep pausing while I was reading it to remind myself that the events actually took place. Additionally, for people even living in the US, the real story is not the one we know. It's actually worse than what we've been taught. It is the story of impossible struggle, survival at all costs, perseverance, and even, seriously, like it couldn't get any worse, a goddamn murderer in the midst. I can't recommend this book enough. It's a perfect read. X, Alison. I think the X is a kiss.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah?
Or might be a poke in the eyes.
Punch in the face, yeah. So Alison, she goes on to write, "I host Resolved Mysteries and True Crime Snack Time, both excellent podcasts, mm-hmm. and am a colossal fan of your podcast. Keep up the fantastic work. Lesser than symbol three.
That
the
means you're
three.
You're more immature than a 3 year old.
Right, I'm more immature. I thought it was a. It could be a heart on the side.
Oh, I didn't think of it like that.
She says I'm less than a 3 year old.
Yeah.
She's right, you know.
Yeah, your intellect, perhaps.
Thanks, Alison. So, yeah, thank you, Alison. That book was The Indifferent Stars Above, The Harrowing Saga of the Donna Party Bride by Daniel James Brown, the details of which will be in the show notes. If you'd like to submit a true crime nerd time, visit our website, bloodymurderpodcast.com, for instructions on how to contribute.
Oh, and make sure that you check out Alison's podcasts, Resolve Mysteries and True Crime Snack Time. Very much worth your while. Put them in your ears.
And now for the conclusion of the case of the smiling sociopath.
After months of searching for Lindsay, the police started treating her disappearance as a murder case. The police found out that she'd sought an appointment with a solicitor to get a divorce. She was due to see them on December 16th, but never showed up. Detective Superintendent Sloan believed that she and Kwai had got in a fight and she'd told him she wanted a divorce, and that was a catalyst for what Kwai had done to her. He also added, when we looked into those dates, we found that Lindsay had telephoned the benefits agency from a phone box to say that her benefits check hadn't been sent. It transpired that Mitchell had stolen them and cashed them in himself. We knew that was probably the last conversation she would ever have. It wasn't actually uncommon for Mitchell Kwai to take off with Lindsay's welfare payments, leaving her with no money to feed herself or her children. For all that he tried to paint himself as a super dad after Lindsay's disappearance, he was hardly ever there for the children when she was around.
Who goes off and spends the money their children need for food and milk?
I know, nobody. It's revolting.
The police did not believe Mitchell Kwai's story that Lindsay went out partying all night on Christmas Eve, then deserted her kids on Christmas Day. They always considered him to be their only legitimate suspect. An investigation into Lindsay's murder was launched in June 1999. The police were pretty sure from the beginning they were dealing with a murder, but had to first look at the case as that of a missing person. Police divers searched lakes, marshes and rivers throughout Merseyside for her body. They searched she and Mitchell's house and dug up the garden and found no trace of her body or evidence of foul play. With no body, it would be hard for the authorities to prove Lindsay was dead, not just missing.
Yeah, well, it had been over 2 months, possibly even more than that, since her disappearance when they actually searched the house. So even if there had been some evidence, like...
He had plenty of
time. He had so much time to dispose of anything incriminating.
Yeah, and clean it up, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Meanwhile, Kwai was having the time of his life. He'd always thought he was something special, someone worthy of attention, and now the world had finally caught up. He adored his little bout of fame, constantly going on TV shows to proclaim his innocence. You can see on his face how much he enjoys it. He can't stop smiling when he talks. He just looks so fucking pleased with himself. In all his interviews, he painted Lindsay as this flighty bitch who abandoned her children. He used those kids like a human shield. There was no trying to shelter them from what was happening. He happily paraded them around in front of the press, pretending to be a heartbroken husband who had been left behind with the children by his wanton wife. He even told the kids their mother had abandoned them. Lindsay's family knew as soon as she went missing that Kwai had killed her. Her father Peter put missing posters up near her house to make Kwai have to see them every day, hoping to tweak his conscience.
Yeah, but the problem is that he has no conscience.
That's right. Kwai knew Peter thought he killed Lindsay. Oh, Peter, he told the media, one day he'll be on my doorstep apologising.
No, he won't.
Imagine being Lindsay's family and seeing this piece of shit you know killed her, regularly badmouth her and you on TV, the radio and newspapers.
Mitchell Kwai was arrested on February 27, 1999 on suspicion of murder, grievous bodily harm and fraud. He admitted the fraud, which was forging Lindsay's signature and cashing her welfare checks. Infuriatingly, the other charges were dropped due to lack of evidence. Kwai said he shouldn't have been charged with fraud as he considered Lindsay's welfare payments to be his money, and he said that he was entitled to them.
Well, he thought he was entitled to everything, really.
He definitely did. He was sentenced to community service working at a charity shop. In the footage of him there doing his community service, he steams a shirt and he says to the camera, talking about Lindsay, this is, me having to do this and leaving me with the kids, I wouldn't piss on her if she was on fire. As the murder charge didn't stick, Kwai got more cocky, and horribly some local people assumed he must not be guilty and started believing all the filthy lies he spouted about Lindsay and her family. He went to the media to sook about how the police had painted him as a murderer when all he'd ever done wrong was to be the sexiest, most awesome guy in the world ever. In January 2000, in an effort to get more press coverage, Kwai decided to tell every media outlet that would listen that he'd had enough press coverage. He humble-braggingly held up to a documentary camera the newspaper article with a picture of him about how he'd had enough press coverage and wanted to leave it to the police now.
Hang on. So he told a TV film crew he was sick of publicity whilst showing them a newspaper article about himself.
Yep. Pretty convincing, right?
The irony is ironic.
Kwai thought he was a criminal genius who had gotten away with his wife's murder. Not content with his lack of attention for leaving it to the police, he soon decided to invite journalists into his home again to talk about the case in front of the children while he chain-smoked around them. He went on a rant about how he was going to sue the police for arresting him with no evidence. He told journalists it was horrible being arrested and he'd never been in a cell before, but that and everything else he said was just diarrhea spewing out of his mouth like the shit fountain that he was.
Hang on. He had previously been arrested and put in a cell for destroying the flat he and Lindsay used to live in when Robin was 4 months old.
Yep, he definitely had. Possibly other occasions too.
Kwai vowed to the TV cameras that he wouldn't rest until the police apologised to him or he got financial compensation. He said he was entitled to it, adding, "The more pressure they put on me, the more determined I am to find Lindsay and sue the balls off the police."
The word entitled comes up a lot with this entitled cunt, doesn't it?
Entitled cunt feels entitled.
Certainly.
The authorities were frustrated beyond belief with this vile, toxic douchebag. He had no basis whatsoever to sue the police. Nonetheless, he went around town boasting to everyone about how strong his case was against them. Detective Superintendent Sloan said, "I would describe Mitchell Kwai as an egotist. He's always seeking publicity. I understand that he keeps all the newspaper cuttings at his home, and for me, he's just basking in all this notoriety." You know, Tara, he probably wanks looking in the mirror.
Oh, God. You know what? He probably would, with a fag in his mouth.
Kwai did not appreciate the fact that Detective Superintendent Sloan appeared in the media regularly talking about the case. He didn't want the spotlight to leave him even for a second, and he knew Sloan knew that he killed Lindsay. So he did what any man with a missing wife would do. He sent Sloan a packet of Just for Men hair dye and told him he should use it as the middle-aged Sloan's hair was turning grey and it might improve his confidence a bit. Kwai thought this was hilarious.
He could have been on Saturday Night Live.
In response, frustrated as fuck, Sloan said, "Here I am, a senior investigating officer, trying to find this man's missing wife, and he's really goading me." In early 2000, the police stopped looking for Lindsay's body, but her father, Peter, still spent all his time searching for her. He dug in the woods and waded through lakes, ditches, and stinking canals. He was a man of few words who could find no other way to deal with his overwhelming grief. Desperate for help, Lindsay's family turned to psychics to try and find her remains. A lot of them said she was surrounded by water. They always say that, don't they? Mm. See, there's water everywhere in the seaside town of Southport. The family wished her ghost would visit one of them and tell them where she was. Peter had to go pick up his grandchildren, Robin and Jack, off Kwai on the weekends. It took all Peter had to remain civil, despite wanting to kill him.
What an absolutely horrendous situation for him to be in.
I know. He'd never go inside the flat, though, even though Kwai constantly tried to make him come in and chat. Kwai, wanting to manipulate Peter into believing his bullshit, complained to the press about his father-in-law's lack of friendliness.
Oh, the gall. At 8 a.m. on June 7th, 2000, Mitchell Kwai was arrested again on suspicion of murder. But without a body, police had to rely on circumstantial evidence to bring Kwai to justice. Lindsay's family were relieved by his arrest. They hoped to God the case was solid and they could find out what happened to Lindsay and where her body was so that they could bury her. For the first time, Detective Superintendent Sloan and Mitchell Kwai met face to face. On the case for 2 years, Sloan had realised that whenever questioned about Lindsay, Kwai always told the exact same story at the exact same pace in the same way. He figured if he could break up his story and his pace, he might be able to get him to admit the truth. In a great example of a perfect police interrogation, Sloan slowly and methodically picked apart his story bit by bit and repeatedly told Kwai about all of the reports of domestic abuse that they could find against him, including many from his ex-girlfriends. Kwai remained silent throughout 36 hours of questioning, only saying, "No comment." But Sloan got to Kwai. Late on the evening of June 8th, he was charged with murder. This shook the pissy little bitch in his pissy little bitch boots. Soon afterwards, Kwai broke down and fucking finally confessed. He said that in the early hours of December 16th, 1998, he and Lindsay had argued. Lindsay reportedly had said that she wanted a divorce. In response, Kwai grabbed Lindsay and threw her to the floor. He said he held her around the neck, strangling her on the floor for 20 minutes. Afterwards, he put her corpse in a bedroom and sealed the door with towels to avoid the smell of her decomposing body from permeating the house. He then got his 22-year-old brother Elliot, who was a butcher, to come over. With his help, he cut up Lindsay's corpse in the bathtub.
He also told them that he stabbed her 7 times to draw out the blood. Ugh.
Detective Superintendent Sloan said, "I always thought that, as he admitted, he strangled her. I never considered he would have gone to the lengths he did. It was gruesome to cut her up in a bath which he bathed the children in. It just sums up what a horrible, nasty person he is."
Kwai took the police on a tour of Southport to find her remains. The authorities were worried it was just another publicity stunt, as he insisted that the press were there. Kwai was laughing and joking the whole time, and he's never shown any remorse.
Well, he doesn't have any, like, aside from feeling really sorry for himself.
Lindsay's dismembered torso was found in a sealed black garbage bag in a shallow grave near a roller coaster at the Southport Pleasureland Fun Fair where Kwai used to work.
Yeah, and he referred to her torso as a carcass.
Doesn't see people as people.
No.
Sees them as things.
Definitely.
The next day, her arms and legs, also wrapped in garbage bags, were discovered in bushes next to a railway line less than half a mile from the house where the couple lived. In a big final fuck you to his abused wife, Kwai cut off Lindsay's head and hands and put them in a garbage bag, which he put out with the rubbish. It is reportedly buried amongst 200,000 tons of refuse on a Lancashire tip and has never been recovered. Lindsay's father, Peter, said of this terrible development, "I don't think Lindsay will ever rest. I don't think the family will ever rest knowing we can't put all of her to rest. It's diabolical." At the start of his trial at Liverpool Crown Court, Kwai, who denied murder but admitted manslaughter, changed his plea to guilty. He was also charged with conspiracy to pervert the course of justice by pretending his wife was still alive. In 2001, Kwai was sentenced to life with a minimum of 17 years in prison. His brother Elliot was sentenced to 7 years for helping dispose of her body. I mean, what he said in the confession was, he cut her up and his brother held the bag open.
Yeah, but...
while he put the pieces in. Mm. But his brother was a butcher.
Yeah.
He must have been...
It definitely could be his brother did more than just that and he was trying to protect his brother.
I think the jury saw through that.
Yeah.
And that's why he got 7 years. Applause broke out in the public gallery as pissy-faced Kwai was led to the cells. Sloan said seeing Kwai jailed was a highlight of his career. That was some good police work.
Oh, yeah, he's awesome.
Go Sloan. Psychiatric nurse Chris Keneally worked at Alt Course Prison and met Kwai there. In his book Jail Stories, My Stretch in Alt Course Part 2, Keneally talks about what Kwai was like behind bars. He wrote that Kwai approached him and asked, "Do you know who I am?"
"Do you know who I am?"
Keneally told him he didn't. He wrote, "I always deny knowing who a criminal was. If you admit knowing about him, you give him this sense of his own self-importance and inflate his ego."
Oh, it might have been worth a shot, though, because if this guy's ego expanded anymore, he would have surely exploded.
Well, you can only hope. Keneally continued, "During one conversation with me, he told me that he had buried his wife's liver under a bridge in Southport. Then he laughed out loud and commented, 'Do you get it? The bridge over the liver of Kwai?' He was riffing off the famous movie Bridge Over the River Kwai. He thought it was a super funny joke, but Keneally didn't laugh. Kwai also regularly sooked that nobody had any sympathy for him."
Boo fucking who?
Kwai asked Keneally if he'd seen him on TV. Keneally again said no. In the book, he writes that Kwai seemed very disappointed. He expected that everyone in the prison would now recognise his star status, and he also expected to be treated as the celebrity that he thought he was. But he wasn't, because fuck him.
Exactly. Kwai has been up for parole twice now, but luckily both times he was denied. In a 2018 report detailing the parole board's decision, risk factors associated with Kwai were listed as his vengeful thinking, controlling and manipulative behaviour, lack of remorse, bullying of other prisoners, and drug and alcohol abuse while in prison. Lindsay's daughter Robin, who's now in her early 20s, organised a petition to try to keep Mitchell Kwai behind bars. At last count, she'd gotten over 11,000 signatures. The Wilson family suffered a second tragedy just months after Kwai was jailed, when one of Lindsay's older brothers, Peter Wilson Jr., committed suicide. Peter was unable to live with what happened to Lindsay, both before and after her murder. Lindsay's family have said that they feel very guilty for not being there for her. Her dad said that they shouldn't have done what they did, that they should have stayed involved instead. Lindsay's mother, Linda, told Prime Suspect Real Life, "My biggest regret is probably giving my consent for her to marry him, and Lindsay's worst mistake was taking Mitchell back."
Yeah, I'm not really happy with that statement. It sounds a little bit victim-blaming.
Yeah.
Nothing in her behaviour warranted the way she was treated.
Oh, certainly not. Her sister Paula added, "What I believe truly happened to Lindsay is domestic violence at its worst and how it finishes for a lot of women. And the fact that people don't talk about it and the fact that it isn't reported, silence is violence as well. Something inside every one of us has died. I think when Lindsay died, it died with us as well. We've lost something that we weren't really looking after at the time. I think the ultimate victims are the children because they've been robbed of her." This case is appalling and upsetting, and the most upsetting part, to me anyway, is how common this scenario is. It's a story as old as time. Boy meets girl, they fall in love, boy abuses girl, girl tries to leave several times but never breaks free, boy kills girl.
Boy is the word here. Real men don't treat women like that. That's immature bullshit.
Yeah.
We'd like to lay down some facts about domestic violence we obtained from the National Domestic Violence Hotline and domesticviolence.com.au. On average, at least one woman a week is killed by a partner or former partner in Australia.
Women are at least three times more likely than men to experience violence from an intimate partner.
Of those women who experience violence, more than half have children in their care.
Intimate partner violence contributes to more death, disability and illness in women aged 15 to 44 than any other preventable risk factor.
On average, a woman will leave an abusive relationship seven times before she leaves for good.
It's quite a process to break out of the abusive cycle.
Yeah. Yeah. If this is happening to someone that you know, even though they keep going back, be there for them. They will leave eventually. They need help. Your help. Well, that was a hard story.
Yeah, I highly recommend that people have a look at the show notes on our website and check out one of the shows that actually have this horrible man banging on about how innocent he is, because seeing him seeing the footage just blows your mind.
It really does.
Yeah. It's
a hard story, but I think it's a story that needs to be told and needs to be listened to.
Yeah. Well, something really needs to happen to change the fact that this is just such an epidemic.
Yeah, the message is not getting through, is it, Tara?
Something's gone wrong there. Maybe I should just mention it's also weird to be female because, like, the thing that you have to think of first before you get in a relationship is, do I think that this guy's going to kill me?
Yeah.
Being a heterosexual female, I should specify. But really, you have to be like, do I think he'll kill me? Where do we stand there?
Yeah.
It's a fun way to look at the world.
Yes. Well, I have one question for you, Tara.
Yeah?
What is Aussie Az?
Ah, Aussie Az are tales of criminal stupidity and bloody legends with a quintessentially Australian flavour. Would you like to hear one?
I would, Tara.
Ah, Australia. When it's not on fire, it's flooding. New South Wales was recently hit with a ridiculous amount of rain. Some areas recorded more than 300 millimetres in 48 hours. The super soaking caused a lot of areas to flood, which turned the streets into rivers and cut off the roads. This situation meant a lot of people stayed inside. But not a group of true blue larrikins in the New South Wales central coast town of Tuggerah. Video of the men riding a jet ski down the flooded streets and then trying to paddle a boogie board through the drive-through McDonald's has gone viral after it was posted on Reddit with the caption, "Oh, when it's flash flooding outside, but you're desperate for some Maccas." A lot of people weighed in on the stupidity of the stunt, while one person, probably an Aussie, commented, "Everyone calm down. My only concern is how he'll keep his nuggets dry."
Hey, when you're riding a jet ski through flooded streets, do you stop at red lights and stop signs and things and give
not
way to pedestrians?
Guy. Not this bloody, bloody Aussie battler, nah. There aren't a lot of pedestrians to give way to.
No?
No.
Swimmers?
No. Okay, there are a lot of snakes in floodwater. Like, it's actually really not a great idea to swim in floodwater.
No, I wouldn't.
There's all
I wouldn't
kinds
think
of
so.
Things in there. The snakes are what bother me the most.
Aquatic spiders.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Eels, sharks, bull sharks. There's actually
shark spiders.
Shark spiders. I saw some footage. I don't know what it was. It was some news footage and it was somewhere flooded and there was actually a shark that had somehow ended up in it. Like off the side of a river near a park or something. Some place a shark shouldn't be because it was all underwater.
Mm.
Yeah. Just not wise.
No, not good.
Not wise. New South Wales Minister for Police and Emergency Services, David Elliott, was not impressed by the aquatic jackassery.
Oh, what did he say?
Well, Davo told reporters, "I have asked the police if they could investigate that matter. With this sort of buffhead behaviour, we're not going to tolerate it as far as the police are concerned." I love the fact that a press statement of a government minister included the term buffhead behaviour. That is Aussie Az in a nutshell.
Well, that's a law, you know. A buffhead behaviour is illegal.
Yeah, it's not allowed in this country.
You can be charged with that.
Well, what he was worried about is that there's like, you know, because of all the flooding, a lot of people actually were in danger and there were like life-threatening situations happening. And so he didn't want, you know, a bunch of larrikins going around creating drama and needing assistance if something went wrong that would divert it from people who actually were
right.
in need.
That's right. The resources are wanted.
I mean, he totally
elsewhere.
Has a point here. One of the knuckleheads responsible for the videos told 10 Daily that they weren't worried about their safety. He said, "Nah, not at all. I guess you don't think about that when you're living in the moment. Woo, YOLO to the max." What's the bet that guy has like a giant back tattoo of himself riding a jet ski? He added, "Plus, the guy on the jet ski had a life jacket on for his safety from drowning." Well, not in the video I watched, he didn't, unless his black singlet was somehow inflatable. Which perhaps it was. The rambunctious young man went on to give shit to Davo, the New South Wales Minister for Police and Emergency Services, by claiming that, "Oh, he just doesn't have a sense of humour." I reckon we should put this buffhead in charge of police and emergency services for a red hot minute and see how much of a sense of humour he has afterwards. Can you imagine what Davo's been through this year with the fires and now the floods? Davo's like, "Oh, for fuck's sake, guys, don't make any more problems, please."
That's right, I'm so tired of your shit.
Yeah. I'm on Team Davo, but hey, perhaps I'm just not really like I'm thinking too much about it because I'm not really living in the moment. Woo!
Yeah, you're not gnarly enough, Tara. You're not nearly gnarly enough.
I'm not. I'm definitely not. This brings us to the end of another episode. But before we go, we'd like to thank some people who took the time to write us some good reviews. So thank you to Casey Franklin
and Mike.
And we'd also like to thank our Facebook moderating team.
We love our patrons, Tara, and in an attempt to show them how much we do, we're holding monthly giveaways.
This month, we're giving away a set of funky Bloody Murder fridge magnets.
They stick to your fridge.
How do they do that?
The scienticians don't know.
Oh, nobody knows.
So ask a magnet scientician and they won't be able to tell you.
Is that because they don't exist?
They don't know.
Ah.
To win, just join our Bloody Murder Patreon program for a level above $5. So thanks for listening, and thanks to our new patrons. We've got a bunch of them. Bloody legends they are.
They are indeed.
Thank you to Rick Webster.
Melissa Fraser.
Gary Howard.
Felicia Lowther.
Paul Shields. Hi, Paul.
Lindsay Tanaka.
Rebecca Savavi.
Eric Helgren.
Kaz Joyce.
Ella Relich-Godino.
And Kitty. Meow.
If you'd like to support us, visit our website for details.
Or if you just want to buy us a drink because we're really thirsty, there's a PayPal donate button there too. I've been Barney Black.
And I've been Tara Sarabat.
And this is Bloody Murder.
Please don't forget to review us on Apple Podcasts or our Facebook page.
And of course, rate and subscribe. It really helps us.
You can follow us through our Facebook page or join our Facebook group. On Twitter, we're at Bloody Murder Pod. And on Instagram, we're Bloody_Murder_Podcast.
Check out our website, bloodymurderpodcast.com, for news, galleries, more episodes and merchandise.
Thanks for sticking around, and we'll be back really soon.
Goodbye and adios.
And keep kicking against the pricks. Pricks.
Is there any other? Oh, look at that. We did it.
I know. Oh, God. Well, you know, we didn't turn into, like, total puddles. I guess we're still sort of in human form, sort of.
Oh, I'm a puddle of a human being.
Yeah.
Not very deep.
No. No. Quite muddy.
Quite muddy. Murky.
Full of eels. Snakes, spiders.
Yeah, yeah.
Spider sharks.
I don't taste good, too.
No, but Pop, my dog Pop, she would try to lick you. She loves having a little taste of puddle water.
I taste like dirt.
I would imagine so.
Well, you're great. You got no, Barney, you're lovely. You're not a puddle at all.
I thought you hated it when I was nice to you, and then you, like, said mean things to me. So I'm supposed to be mean to you because it's more comfortable for you than when I'm nice to you. Or do I have this all wrong?
Oh, no. It's...
Have I been playing this wrong for, like, 20 fucking years now?
Yeah, no. No, yeah.
Okay, you're beautiful and lovely. You have the most amazing eyes. They're like swimming pools. They haunt my dreams. They're like a screensaver for my soul. I've written you several poems about them. Would you like to hear one?
Hey, Sincerity wrote a letter to you and said, I don't know who you are.
Sincerity jumped down your throat and told you to fuck off.
See, that's what I like.
Ah, here we are, right back where we started.
I know, it's confusing, isn't it?
It is for me.
Never a dull moment, eh?
I don't know, there's a lot of dull moments, but they're still quite confusing.
Oh, yeah. They're all shit, really, aren't they?
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm going to go back and crawl into my puddle.
Do it. As well as exclusive monthly uncensored patron-only episodes where Tara swears more. Excuse me, you said a Tara trap, didn't you?
I did.
You fuck.
I said a Tara trap.
How dare you? I can't believe I fell for it.
He's abusive. Why did my voice go up like that?
Because you're a cunt.
Hey!
That's it. It's always the answer. at least we've got a couple of C-bombs in this one. People have been complaining on Twitter about our lack of swearing.
Wow. She's a harsh mistress, Twitter, isn't she?
Oh, yeah. I don't know. It's like, it doesn't really matter what you do. Someone's going to have it. Like,
I used to like them when they said cunt all the time, but now they don't. I don't like them as much.
Oh, no, they weren't mean about it, actually. They were. Right. I think they were joking, actually. But, you know, I was like, well, fuck it. We'll cunt on up for you next week, eh?
They had the intercom on in the room, and they kept lying that it wasn't on, and they were using sonic pressure on my head since 1997.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.